We live in a society that is extremely demanding. I had a cough drop before I came up, so that'll help. We're surrounded by so much activity, and there's so much going on in our lives. A term like multitasking becomes the norm. We're used to it. Everybody's got a television. Everybody's got a computer. Well, most people. Everybody's got a cellular phone. Just this past week, I read in the paper of 5 children that were killed in an accident because the school bus driver was texting while he was driving. It's easy to lose contact with the people that are around us if we're wrapped up in this. What I'm going to say next, I'm probably going to say 3 or 4 times before the time is up. The most important things in our lives are either reserved by us or we can lose them to these demands. Let's start by turning to Proverbs 4, please. Proverbs 4. And we'll look at some verses here, 3 verses. Proverbs 4, verse 20 says, "My son, give attention to my words, incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart." And then in verse 26, it says something kind of strange. It says, "Ponder them. Ponder the path of your feet, and let all your ways be established." We're told here that we should give careful thought to our behavior. So the question becomes, who has time to think? I've heard maybe 6 times in my life somebody talk to me about meditation, meditating, pondering the things of God. And honestly, to a person without God's Spirit, that can sound like voodoo. You know, you think about something and it comes to pass. My title today is Think About It. Think about it. My purpose, brethren, is to consider the power of meditation. There's more to meditation than meets the eye. Meditation is one of those things that we can't understand if we think only on the physical. We can get a hint of it. We can see how it works. But to understand it, we have to indeed be able to grasp that there is a spiritual side. The benefit, for sure, of being able to learn this, to be able to learn of this power, of this God-given tool, and all it can accomplish is that if we master it, it can help us in every area of our lives. I have 3 points for us to consider today. Points are good. They help us stay organized. Point number 1 is simply that God wants us to do this. Let's take a look at Genesis 24. And what we're going to see here is that meditation isn't something that's new. Genesis 24 goes back approximately 4,000 years here. And in verse 63, if you look at verse 63 of Genesis 24, it says, "Isaac went out to meditate in the field in the evening." He was waiting, by the way, he was waiting to meet his wife-to-be at this point. But you see, he went out to meditate in the field. Now, when you read this and you think about it, he didn't have a cell phone. He didn't have a computer. He didn't even have a television set. He didn't have nothing to bother him. Why did he have to go out in the field to do this? I look back on the days of my childhood, and my dad was considerably older than I when I was born. He was 40 years old when I was born. We got our first television set in 1954. I shouldn't really tell you that. Feed them, you have to make sure they're okay. You have to give them bedding. You have to groom them. Isaac didn't have the demands that we have in our society today, but he knew that what he wanted to do was so important that he didn't want interruption. Let's look at Proverbs 24. In Proverbs 24, we're going to catch the first glimpse of see the result of meditation. Proverbs 24 and verse 30 says, I went by the field of a lazy man. So before we go any further, we see already that who's ever doing the writing here knew that this man was lazy. And by the vineyard of a man devoid of understanding, and there it was, all overgrown with thorns, the surface was covered with nettles, the stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well. So he took the time to consider it well, and when he did, he looked on it and received instruction. So what I gather from that is he said, after thinking about it, he said, you know, if I do this, this is what's going to happen. Now, this is strictly a physical application. But you see how thinking about something can give you some instruction. That leads me to point number 20. There's an association between meditation and action. Okay? There's an association between meditation and action. We see a physical application by learning. The viewer saw the result of being lazy and he learned from it. Having been in real estate a lot of years and really having my focus for the majority of those years been what we called the foreclosure market. Oftentimes while driving around with Donna, we'd be driving down a street and I'd say, that house is in foreclosure. That house is in foreclosure. And I could look and I could see that. Now, it isn't always true. I mean, it might have been an older person, maybe as old as me. But I've seen that too, where they just couldn't take care of it anymore. But you can recognize these things. You get a physical application by meditating on it. Honestly, I've told a lot of people since I graduated from college that the one thing that I learned in college was how to learn. Really, it's the one thing that I took out of there was how to study, how to learn. Let's look at Ezekiel 18. More than likely, the man who witnessed these things, who wrote that proverb, changed his action for sure, or at least it led him to avoid behavior that could lead to his destruction. Okay? Now in Ezekiel 18, we're familiar with this verse. In verse 20, it says, the soul that sins shall die. The son shall not bear the guilt of the father, nor the father bear the guilt of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon himself. But if a wicked man turns from all his sins that he's committed and keeps my statutes and does what is lawful and right, he shall surely live and not die. Now keep your finger here and flip back to Haggai 1, and let's just read one verse there. In Haggai 1, if you look at verse 5, it says, therefore, thus says the Eternal of Hosts, consider your ways. Consider your ways. Okay? Now flip back to Ezekiel 18. And let's look at verse 28. Keeping in mind what verses 20 and 21 had to say to us, in verse 28 it says, because he considers and turns away from all transgressions which he committed, he shall surely live and not die. Again, point two is there's an association between meditation and action. There's an association between meditation and action. Let's look at Joshua, please, the first chapter. Joshua. Long before Israel had a king, back in Deuteronomy, God gave instructions for kings. And you're going to read here the same instruction, in essence, that he gave to kings. It says in verse 6, be strong of Joshua 1, verse 6, be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to your fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe and do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, that you may observe and do all that is written in it, for then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. The kings were to do the same thing, and the reason the kings were told to do the same thing was so that they wouldn't think of themselves as better than their brothers. Now, to a purely physical mind, this isn't going to make sense. It isn't going to make sense. In the New Revised Standard, it says in verse 7, be careful to act in accordance with all the law. In other words, it's talking about behavior, you know, not just what we think about, not just what we know. There's a strong association between meditation and the ability to remember. As a result, then we act according to what we remember and what God wants. I told you in the beginning I had mentioned this more than once, so here it comes again. The most important things in our lives are either reserved by us, or else we can spend our time on other things which, although they seem important at the time, are for sure less important. Over the years, as I say, I've listened to a lot of sermons on meditation, yet I found it very difficult to take part in it. I didn't understand it, and the reason for that was just what Mr. Morrison was talking about during announcements. We don't understand spirit. We're physical. That's really why I wanted to begin with that physical example of the guy looking at that field that was overgrown with thorns, because that's something we can grasp easily. The only way you can really understand that meditation works on a spiritual level is to experience it. I'm suspicious that without God's Spirit it's not possible. Let's look at Luke. Luke 1. And consider, as we look at this, how God actually set time aside for a lot of people that he wanted to use. He set them aside, and he set them aside for his service, and we see this throughout the pages of the Bible. What we're going to read here is a prophecy by a man named Zechariah. He was the father of John the Baptist. Start in Luke chapter 1, down near the bottom of the page, verse 76. Verse 76, it says in Luke 1, and you, child, will be called the prophet of the highest, for you will go before the face of the Lord to prepare his ways, to give knowledge of salvation to his people by remission of their sins, through the tender mercy of our God, with which the day spring from on high has visited us, it says in the New Revised Standard, the dawn from on high will break upon us, to give light to those who sit in darkness and the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. So the child grew and became strong in spirit and was in the deserts until the day of his manifestation to Israel. What was he doing out there, and how long was he there? I don't know how long he was there, but I think I know what he was doing out there. He was spending an awful lot of time with God. You know, what do you do when you're in the desert? Frankly, he didn't have a cell phone either. He didn't have a TV. Let's look at Matthew 4. This one we're familiar with. The depth of the thought of this one I've considered often. Matthew 4, verse 1. simply says that Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and nights, afterward he was hungry. What do you think about for 40 days? What did he do for 40 days? We know he didn't spend his time eating. I suspect that he spent an awful lot of time talking to God and an awful lot of time deeply thinking about the severity of the task that lay before him. He had at one time been filled with glory, and I suspect he remembered an awful lot of that. I don't know that. I don't know if that memory was taken from him, but I don't think it was. I mean, not all of it. I know that he knew that, in essence, the existence of humanity depended upon him. And I suspect he was giving a lot of deep thought to his assignment. Others were also in the wilderness. Consider that Moses was in the wilderness for 40 years. Noah was separated. So was Daniel for a time. Elijah was separated 3.5 years. Paul was separated 3 years in the wilderness with Christ. And there are other examples also. As I mentioned, I had listened to a number of sermons in my life on meditation, and there was one that was not that long ago. And this minister talked about an experiment. I looked this experiment up on the internet, and sure enough, not only did he talk about the experiment, it took it to great lengths. And it's meditation to accomplish a physical goal, but it gives us what seems to be an impossible solution to an idea that shows the power of meditation. It happened at the University of Chicago, and really they haven't been involved in athletics since I was a kid, so I know it's been a while. But in essence, he took his basketball team and divided it into thirds. I think there were 15 players. So there was 5 in each group. And for 1 month, 30 days, they practiced, one-third of them practiced free throws for 1 hour a day. Every day for 30 days. Well, I don't know, they probably got the weekend off. But for 30 days, they shot free throws for 1 hour. That's one-third of the team, 5 of them. Another 5 was set aside and told to sit down and just think about it. Just think about it. Don't shoot the free throws, just think about it. And the third group, well, they were told to just take that time off and do nothing. The results were interesting. At the end of 30 days, the first group had improved their free throw shooting 24%. And I sat at home and I did this. And I could almost tell when they were going in. The second group improved their shooting 23% without ever having taken a shot. The third group, as you might expect, didn't improve at all. Since then, this means of improving the game has been practiced by many. Some it hasn't, I mean, because they didn't do it. You may have heard the name Shaq O'Neal. He's a great big guy. He does advertisements now. But they actually had a form of defense against this guy because he was so big. It was called Hack-a-Shaq. Every time he'd get the ball, they'd whack him one, and he'd have to go shoot the free throw. And he couldn't make the shot. So they knew they had a good chance of winning the game if they just keep fouling this guy. He didn't evidently practice that. Michael Jordan, by the way, did practice the very way that we talked about. In fact, in one game, he made a free throw with his eyes closed. He did it to show off, so that was not really what he was. He wasn't showing that the meditation worked, but the fact is that it did. Okay, well, what does this have to do with as far as our calling is concerned? Consider, I know I've talked a number of times about a problem that I've had when I would be driving behind somebody and they'd step on the brakes while the light was still green. You know, I always used to step on the gas if the light was green because that way I could make the light. So when someone would step on the brake while the light was still green, I knew why they were doing it. They were doing it to be careful. Just in case that light turned yellow, they didn't want to pull into the intersection and whack somebody. But I would murmur to myself. Now consider what would happen if instead of griping about it, I would give considerable thought to this. combined with prayer. Aside from God's instruction in James 3, which simply says wisdom from above is pure, peaceful, gentle, and willing to yield. Putting that aside, just the act of me talking to God about it and thinking about gently stepping on the brake myself, because after all, that's how we're going to avoid an accident. Okay, here's point number 3. Simply, we put prayer and God's guidance together with meditation, and He can lead us to a very positive spiritual change. It's easy to see and understand the physical change. The garden that's overgrown with thorns, that's easy. The business of shooting a free throw, that's not so easy. How do you do that? I don't know, because there's a spiritual element involved there that I don't think they understood. They just saw that it worked. But if we put the power of God's spiritual guidance through prayer together with our meditation, it can lead to a tremendous, positive spiritual change. Just imagine, for example, no matter what our problem is, if we've got a problem, I mean, I don't know if any of you got problems. I have a few. But I just in my mind said, okay, I remember Mr. Morrison's 4-part sermon on the human condition. And I picked out, I said, suppose that we spent 60 minutes, and that's a long time. That might be a little too much, maybe 30 minutes, pondering the concept of whatever our problem is. Whether it's if we have a problem with pride, maybe, or the need to be in charge of other people, or maybe to have our needs supplied and our desires supplied by other people. Whatever our problem is. Psalm 4:4 tells us to be angry but not to sin. Then it tells us, it follows it immediately, it says, meditate. Okay, that says to me, if you've got a problem with anger, and you consider what's causing the anger, and how can I not be angry? I have been considering lately quite a bit. I've been giving a lot of thought to, what if everybody on earth just kept one of God's Ten Commandments, just one? And I picked number 10. Only because they don't have to do, you know, you don't have to do anything for that one. You just think, you know. Don't covet. It's really pretty astounding when you consider that. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen. But if you didn't covet, we wouldn't need an army. What does that have to do with an army? Because the army's used, according to James, to go take stuff away from other people because we covet it. Well, that would save a lot of money if we didn't need an army. And you go on like this and you find virtually, if they just kept one commandment, they'd be ending up keeping all 10 commandments. Let's look at Philippians 4. We can depend upon the results of meditation. With God's Spirit, the results that were witnessed and practiced as far as basketball was concerned can be greatly exceeded. The basketball players didn't spend time in prayer, by the way. They just thought about making baskets. And as I say, that, according to the internet, what I read was that particular method has been picked up by a lot of teams across the nation. And they do that. They practice thinking about it. Philippians 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Boy, we've probably read that 100 times, maybe 200, 300 since I've been part of the church. And yet, I can't say that I've really spent a lot of time meditating about these things. I've thought a lot about some things. And I suppose that in a way I've thought about some of these. But you notice it's not a suggestion. God's telling us to do this. God knows that there's an association between the process of meditation and the ability for us to please him in our behavior. The most important things in our lives are either reserved by us, or we can lose them to the demands of society. Let's look at Psalm 63. By the way, the Psalms, I just typed into word search, meditate, and meditating, and I came up in the Psalms with, I think it was about 20 times that they're referenced. Psalm 63:1, it says as an intro, a psalm of David when he was in the wilderness of Judah. Well, okay, there he was again. He was away from people. He still had to take care of the animals. I mean, he probably wasn't wrestling with a bear or a lion when he was thinking this. But it says in verse 63, chapter 63 of Psalms, verse 1, O God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where there's no water. For I have looked for you in a sanctuary to see your power and glory, because your loving kindness is better than life. My lips shall praise you. Thus I will bless you while I live. I will lift my hands in your name. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise you with joyful lips when I remember you on my bed. I meditate on you in night watches. David speaks of this more than once. When we talk about, when Mr. Christensen talks about being able to love as God loves, it isn't going to happen without meditation. It isn't going to happen without us thinking about it. Look at Psalm 119. You'll recognize these words, I'm sure. Psalm 119, verse 97. Oh, how love I your law. It's my meditation all the day. You, through your commandments, make me wiser than my enemies, for they are ever with me. I have more understanding than my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. Okay, point 3a. There's not going to be a B. This is just a sub-point. God will guide us through his requirements to learn what he worked, to learn that this works. God will guide us through his requirements to learn that this process works. Look at 2 Peter. And you see what I was talking about earlier when I went to school, how the thing that I remember most about when I finally got out was how to learn, how to study. 2 Peter 1, verse 12. Peter says, I will not be negligent. I will remind you always of these things, though you know and are established in the present truth. We need to be reminded constantly. That's why God causes things to be repeated, like Sabbaths and holy days, because we forget quickly. Guess what meditation helps us to do? It helps us, among other things, to remember. It's been said we are what we eat. Consider how much more we are what we think. We'll close in 1 Timothy, please, the 4th chapter. And we'll read verses 11 through 15. 1 Timothy 4, verse 11. These things command and teach, Paul tells Timothy. Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to believers in word and conduct, in love and spirit, in faith and in purity. Till I come, give attention to reading, exhortation to doctrine. Do not neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by prophecy with the laying on of hands of the eldership. Meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them, that your progress may be evident to all. 3 points. Number one, God wants us to do this. Number two, there's an association between meditation and action. And number three, simply put, combined with prayer and God's guidance, which he will give, meditation can lead to tremendous positive spiritual change. Brethren, meditation is an extremely powerful, God-given spiritual tool.